This is the Pakistan Development Podcast. I'm Muneeb Ansari.
And I'm Rabia Malik.
You can listen to all of our episodes and comment on them at pakistandevelopmentpodcast.wordpress.com.
We continue our conversation with Dr. Faisal Bari. In part one, we spoke about education reform in Pakistan. In this episode, we ask him about how education policy is made and by whom.
The 18th Amendment to the Constitution in 2010 has devolved decision-making authorities in education to the provincial tiers. How effective has this decentralization been?
There is too much centralization. In the sense that I think what we have done is essentially move responsibility from Islamabad to the provincial capitals. And there isn't, as yet, I don't see much of a movement from province to the lower level. Province, in fact, is to a large extent, the provinces are resisting decentralization. Look at the debate on local government and how difficult it has been for the entire society and the Supreme Court to actually force provinces to have local elections, right? And they haven't happened everywhere yet. The question of, it's a very contested space, right? Current politicians and bureaucrats that are sitting in the provinces have absolutely no interest, if you think about from perspective of interest, in ceding power to the lower level. This reduces their power and so on. So even in the, so it hasn't happened yet. There's a pushback also and that it shouldn't happen, but obviously some form of local government will come. But there is also an added dimension, and that has to do with the fact that people usually use this notion that there is no capacity at the local level to actually do that. But I mean, if there are gains from localization, then the argument should only be that we have to build capacity, right? And and that might take a year, 2 years to build capacity at the local level to manage schools or to manage local cadres, etc. But that should not be an argument for centralization in any sense.
How much of it is a capacity question, and how much of it is a retention of power question?
Most of it is actually retention of power question. It has to do with the fact that as a politician or as a bureaucrat, your worth in Pakistan is very much measured through the control over resources, control over ability to do things for your area and so on. So if you localize it, it adds a lot more players in the game. It makes it a lot more messy from the perspective of, if you're thinking from dictatorial means of decision making, etc., you have to then negotiate with a lot more players. And which is why, if you see, local government conversation has always happened under military regimes, right? Because they need an alternative power base. So they bypass the provincial and other national politicians and create the local governments. But as soon as the provincial and national politicians come, usually either local governments are scrapped or they are made ineffective, essentially, right? And they use power much more directly themselves. So now, you know, we have to somehow move from here to actually recognizing the need for local government and local governance. Bureaucrats, the Secretary of Education sitting in Lahore, has a workforce of almost 400,000 teachers that he or she manages, right? Clearly, that's not efficient. Yet at the same time, there is no effort, in fact, to decentralize and make it local. And partly that has to do with the executive trying to manage power and not letting too many alternative power bases develop. Here's an example. The Local Government Act for Punjab clearly specifies they're going to set up educational boards, district education authority and district health authority. But if you read the bylaws that are being proposed for district education authority, essentially a number of people on those boards are going to be appointed by the chief minister directly. And even the chairperson, etc., are going to be, the CEO is going to be appointed by the chief minister and will in a way be reporting to the chief minister. Now, why would the chief minister want to retain that? I mean, why aren't these elected people, if it's going to be a district board, why aren't they not being elected by the people of the district? And why are they not being held accountable to the district people rather than to the chief minister of the province? And this is clearly just an attempt to keep a centralized structure while you give the rhetoric, given to the rhetoric of localization. And it's actually the direct control of the chief minister on these areas, which are obviously very large areas, both health and education, rather than going for a decentralized structure. This is more true of Punjab, by the way, than in some of the other provinces. I think Punjab has more, because of its historically, its political culture right now, and the party in power, which has been in power for a long time, this and is not being challenged through the political system. It's much more a product of that than other provinces. I think KP is in a very different position. Sindh is a lot more contested as well. So there the local government laws are going to be different, hopefully.
Which decisions should be made more locally and which should be retained at a more central level?
This issue of localization versus centralization, it varies across sub-questions of education. So what you might want to do is, if you're setting standards, let's say, of learning of grade 4 children, what they should have learned, that could very well be provincial or even national. It need not be decentralized to at any level at all, in fact, right? So you could, if you're setting standards, that can be national. And you get agreement from all the provinces that a grade 4 child needs to learn this in maths or science by the end of grade 4, etc., etc. If you're talking about medium of instruction and language, that could very well be provincial, or even if it's a matter of local languages, it could even be more local than that, but notified by the province, because the province has to recognize what languages, etc., are being done. Books can be provincial. Textbooks and curriculum can be provincial. It need not be local. And in, you, what you need to do is set the curriculum at the provincial level, or but books can be any of the private or public sector thing. You don't have to prescribe specific books. Books for any curriculum, right? Like we do in, say, O levels or at university level, we don't really specify any book. We specify a curriculum, and then people can read whatever they want. And schools can choose whatever they want. School administration has to come down to the school level anyway, a lot of it, right? It cannot be at the province level or even at the district level. That has to be really an empowered, a suitably empowered head teacher and head principal that has to do most of the management that needs to be done at the school level. How he responds to or she responds to local competition, what is the best way of organizing the school, how do you raise some of the local finances, involve the community, etc. A lot of those decisions should be at the school level. Where the district and sub-district level or tehsil has to come in is deciding where a school needs to be located, how do we do maintenance for the entire district, and so on and so forth. Teacher cadres can be provincial, but their management will have to come down to district and sub-district level. So a lot of this variation, so how you manage the teacher recruitment as well as posting transfer, and who manages the teacher career path, right? That could be, it could be a provincial cadre, or it could go down to district if you actually want to hire district. District mein masla, the problem with taking it to the district is that if there are very large differences between, say, Lahore and Rajanpur, and you can't find the right teachers in Rajanpur, the advantage of having a provincial cadre is that you can actually ask Lahore residents to move to Rajanpur as teachers, right? If you devolve it completely, it might be very hard for Rajanpur to recruit from Lahore or from other places. It might still be possible, we just have to do some experiments. That at least is not clear to me. Recruitment can be, you know, management of teacher cadres can be taken down to district or sub-district, but clearly, there will be some link with the province, because even in, say, development finance, even if you decentralize finance, you do, the province and the nation state does retain the right to do redistribution to allow for bringing sub-parts of the nationality together, right? So if Balochistan is left far behind, Punjab goes far ahead, that's not good for the federation. So the federation owes a responsibility to bring up Balochistan, and to make sure that the difference between the two areas does not become too large. That will have to apply to educational issues within provinces also.
How is research and evidence connected to education policy making in Pakistan today?
So, I mean, there's not much of a tradition, and there are not many fora for exchanging views and getting feedback from people in general, right? Look at how constipated and how limited the any kind of when NGOs or civil society or government says that we have held consultations with the people of Pakistan. What they essentially mean is three or four seminars at usually one in Islamabad, but three or four at max, one in Islamabad and three, four provincial capitals, and that's about it, where 20, 30 people show up, and essentially the government presents whatever it wants to do, and then it doesn't listen to anyone, but eventually says we consulted the people and so on. So that's not really a notion of consultation process anyway. But we don't have ready fora, and that has partly to do with the larger issue that we talked about before also, about the lack of democratic traditions also, but lack of democratic institutions and structures in each sub-part of government as well. I mean, it's not the case that government departments like the Punjab Education Department has any tradition or any even institutional organizational structures in which they can consult with policymakers or policy recommenders, researchers, etc. It's only at the beck and call of individuals. If they feel like it, they can ask an expert to come in and so on. And whether they take their advice or not is immaterial. Now, if you contrast that with some of the other countries or places, what you find is that there are not only a number of committees which involve parents, which involve a number of other experts, etc., that are formed for the purpose of working on policies, etc. What Pakistani people have to realize is that this not only gives better policy, it allows more experimentation, more views to come in, and so it allows more ownership as well in everyone. But what also it does is that it creates the peer group as well, in which a lot more of the discussion can happen. And it also gives the possibility that when things are done, they will be owned by a lot more people and not just one policy person, etc. I mean, you can take as many examples as you want on this, right? Where did the idea for laptop scheme come from? Where did the idea for Danish schools come from, right? And what's the justification? Who were the people who did the work and said this is a good idea to do? So I'm not saying it's a good or bad idea. That's a separate issue. I mean, those are bad ideas, but let's forget that for the moment. It's just simply that this chief minister came up with the idea. Maybe he got it in his dream, or somebody suggested it to him. We don't know what. And then we don't know the pros and cons of this. We had never debated that. And yet all donors went in and supported something as crazy as Danish schools, right? So where's the structure of this conversation that needs to happen? And what are the fora through which we can do that?
Thank you, Dr. Bari.
Pleasure was all mine.
You can listen to all of our episodes and comment on them at PakistanDevelopmentPodcast.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening.